giveaway gamble is the Irish Independent's assessment of yesterday's budget. 4.7 billion euro giveaway, says the Irish Times. The Irish Examiner says the government has moved to stave off a winter of discontent by helping the elderly, parents, young people and the vulnerable. There are plenty of budget supplements explaining it all. 24 pages in the Examiner, 32 in the Independent, 8 broadsheet pages in the Times. Stop smoking and buy an electric car. That's the consumer advice of Conor Pope in the Times. Smokers who drive long distances and live in large homes are likely to be the main losers after this year's budget, he writes. Almost everyone else looks set to be spared any tax increases or additional charges. The Irish Daily Mail offers another point of view. Gone before you can get it, is the headline. The paper reckons that rising inflation and spiralling fuel costs will wipe out the government's efforts to reward the public with broad welfare and tax reliefs. The Irish Daily Star and Irish Daily Mirror both lead with the death of a young Irish musician, Thomas Kennedy from County Mayo in Georgia. The papers say he was thrown into a river in the city of Gorey last Friday, after five men allegedly confronted him, attacked him and stole his mobile phone. Yesterday, the Star says, it emerged that five people appeared in court in Gorey and four of them were charged with murder. The Irish News and Belfast Telegraph on their front pages both look ahead to what the EU is likely to propose today on the Northern Ireland Protocol. The News says that a solution on importing medicines is expected. The Telegraph says reports have suggested that many of the checks on goods entering Northern Ireland from Britain are set to be removed by the EU. It quotes the Guardian newspaper as reporting that half of customs checks and over half of the checks on meat and plants could go. Despite all the budget coverage, the Times and Independent find room on their front pages to pay tribute to Paddy Maloney, who died yesterday, and there's a large photograph of him in both. The Times describes him as the founder of the Chieftains in 1962 and the multi-instrumentalist at the forefront of the renaissance of interest in Irish traditional music. And as for other influences, John Marr in The Independent says it's almost easier to list the household names who didn't work with the Chieftains. Those he mentions are Mick Jagger, Madonna, Pavarotti, Ry Cooder, Jackson Browne, Elvis Costello, Marianne Faithfull and Sinead O'Connor. Maloney was said to be especially proud of the album the Chieftains made with Van Morrison. Irish Heartbeat, released in 1988, fused the talents of Dublin and Belfast like never before, says Marr.
The European Union will today offer to remove a majority of post-Brexit checks on British goods entering Northern Ireland in an effort to ease tensions with the United Kingdom over the Northern Ireland Protocol. Diplomats say these are significant changes to the way the protocol works and will result in a large reduction in the number of checks and controls on goods moving between Great Britain and Northern Ireland. It comes after UK Brexit Minister David Frost warned it would be a historic misjudgment if the EU did not consider scrapping and replacing the protocol. We can speak to our Europe editor Tony Connolly, who has details of these EU proposals. Good morning, Tony. What's the EU putting on the table here?
There's going to be four papers altogether. One will be on medicines. Then there will be a paper on the movement of agri-food products, which of course has been a very tricky part of this post-Brexit arrangement. There'll be a paper on medicine, on customs, and a fourth paper on what role the Northern Ireland institutions and stakeholders such as businesses can have in monitoring and implementing the ongoing protocol over time. But we're told that this will result in a massive reduction in formalities, both for agri-food movements, but also for customs and also for medicines, which of course is a key concern for a lot of people. The fact that certain medicines may not be able to be circulated in Northern Ireland if they're produced in Great Britain. I'm told that it'll be crystal clear that there will be no restrictions on any medicines that are licensed in Great Britain. They can be licensed there and circulated in Northern Ireland. There'll be systems in place to make sure that medicines don't produced in Great Britain don't effectively leak into the single market. And this will apply to cancer drugs and new innovative medicines. So overall, this will be presented as, you know, a very significant reduction in the friction that is currently there under the existing arrangements.
And Tony, while these papers will outline how to get solutions, we're not expecting much in terms of detail or technical outcomes, are we?
That's right. I mean, these papers will effectively signpost where the solutions are. They'll be written in a kind of a general way, and that leaves scope for much more technical discussions to happen. And I think that is an acknowledgement to London, who have said that this can't be a take it or leave it deal, that this has to be a negotiation. The Commission doesn't like the word negotiation because they feel that the treaty is already negotiated. They prefer to call it discussions. But however, there will be intensive negotiations or talks, if you like, over the next few weeks, and they should start on Thursday. And the idea is that if the UK has better ideas on how things can be done according to the spirit of this new approach, then they can be looked at so long as they stay within the framework of the existing protocol.
And the EU will be keen to avoid the perception that it's caving in to UK demands over the protocol. Do you think these proposals will fit the bill?
The way they will be presented will be that this is a result of the European Commission listening to people on the ground in Northern Ireland. Maro Sefcovic, who will be launching these proposals today, went to Northern Ireland in early September and, you know, listened very carefully to a lot of stakeholders and businesses. And this is being pitched as his direct response to them, not a bunch of goodies for London, because obviously the EU does not want to be seen to be essentially rolling over in the face of UK threats. I should say as well that there is no question whatsoever of the European Court of Justice being taken out of the equation. That remains a red line for the European Union.
Indeed it does. And we have news this morning that the UK Conservative Party co-chairman Oliver Dowden, he says reports on steps offered by the EU, they are welcome. We will engage with them. So a positive development there. But what's likely to be the next step here?
Well, the there'll be a certain choreography today. These proposals will be circulated to the College of Commissioners, all 27 commissioners, this morning. Then they will be presented to member states by way of EU ambassadors in Brussels. Because remember that these have not yet been signed off by member states, and there could well be resistance or unhappiness that this really pushes EU law too far. But nonetheless, they will get a look at this afternoon. The European Parliament as well will get sight of the proposals. They'll be published later this afternoon or early this evening, and then tomorrow a team from the European Commission will travel to London to start those talks.
Tony Connolly in Brussels, thank you.
Budget 2020-22, there are criticisms that the government has failed to back its own remote working strategy because incentives aren't strong enough. Doctors are warning that extending the free GP care to 6 and 7-year-olds will mean longer waiting times for medical appointments. And the hospitality sector is disappointed that a reduction in VAT will apply only until the end of August. Our reporter Cian McCormack has been gauging reaction to some of the budget measures, and he's here now. Cian, let's start with GPs. What exactly are they saying?
Well, Justin, doctors are saying the GP system is creaking under pressure and the changes could mean same-day appointments are in danger. Here's chair of the Irish Medical Organisation's GP committee, Dennis McCauley, and Dr. Noreen O'Herlihy, assistant medical director with the Irish College of General Practitioners.
So the ICGP welcomes the extension of free GP care to children aged 6 and 7 years. I suppose we do have some concerns that there is not sufficient capacity within the GP workforce to support this measure. GPs are now working at full capacity with many practices not accepting new patients, and this is a concern.
What's the solution then?
Well, the ICGP is calling for a working group on the future of general practice. I think we all want universal healthcare. It's good for the patient. It's good for everybody. The problem is you can't just decide to provide it today. you have to think about what's the plan that you're going to be able to put in place to support it before you go ahead. So there has to be planning around it.
Dr. Dennis McCauley, chairperson of the GP subcommittee of the Irish Medical Organisation and a general practitioner in Stranorlar, County Donegal. Decisions made for short-term political gain could have very significant medium and long-term effects in that the same-day service is under threat. When you increase the workload, that will make that much less likely to happen.
That's the reaction of GPs there, Cian. And we mentioned remote working. The government is being criticised for not backing its own strategy.
The Chartered Institute of Personnel and Development, CIPD, which represents HR professionals all over the country, is making this charge. Yesterday, it was announced in the budget that employees working from home will be allowed to claim back 30% of their energy bills against their tax. CIPD says this is too low, and the incentives fall short of supporting the government's own five-year remote working strategy. And that strategy pitched remote working as a way to reinvigorate rural areas. Here's CIPD Director Mary Connaughton.
We're disappointed in terms of what the government is offering to encourage and promote remote working. The level of benefit that they've built into the budget is actually very low. We estimate, looking at government figures, that this could be as low as €50 per person per year. And we think there's a real missed opportunity to actually put a more substantial and attractive benefit in place for employees. The budget has not reflected the government's statements that they support and encourage remote working. The level of tax relief that they are proposing for remote working is quite low, and we do not think that that's putting the money where their mouth is.
Cian, groups representing the younger and older in society aren't happy either. You've been talking to them.
Yeah, that's right. Just like Connaughton there, Alone and the Union of Students in Ireland feel there were missed opportunities in Budget 2020. I talked to Sean Moynihan, CEO of Alone, and USI President Claire Austick.
There are certainly some provisions within the budget that we welcome, such as, you know, the travel. We would like to see that extended to all students. The free contraception is also welcome, and the provisions to enhance the SUSE support. But it does not tackle the core issues, such as the student contribution charge, the cost of rent, the lack of purpose-built student accommodation, and the cost of living. And it's like putting a plaster on a broken system with open wounds without tackling the source of it. So it's very disappointing. It's quite insulting as well for the government to allocate funding and to increase the course places of students going forward without actually considering the living spaces and the accommodation available to support them. So there are many students out there at the moment who are still living in hostels, hotels and B&Bs, commuting, and that budget does nothing for them. So overall, it's very disheartening that the government has once again left young people and students in third level behind.
Sean Moynihan, CEO of Alone. Yeah, we think it's a missed opportunity to make Ireland a fair country for young and old alike. So regardless if there's healthcare needs, housing needs, support needs, being the most vulnerable to carbon taxes, young and old have a lot in common. And we feel that we haven't sort of set out the future of a just transition, and we haven't shown the investment in an ageing population.
It's not all negative, is it?
No, it's not all negative. And we welcome the living increase in the living alone allowance. But what we would say is that the €5 a week is well below, under the programme for government, we were meant to be working towards 34% of the average weekly wage, and we're €40 under that. At this rate, it'll be 2030 before we get there.
Rising costs are a concern for the transport sector. Here's Aidan Flynn, CEO of the Freight Transport Association.
Well, there are some nuggets we welcome, but I mean, with the rising costs of doing business, it's creating more challenges than it's solving for the industry.
And what are the rising costs?
Well, the cost of fuel, for instance, is really significant. The carbon tax on top of the obvious rise in costs, the supports for alternative fuel vehicles such as gas, which is, you know, being outstripped now in terms of costs against the cost, the price of diesel, is causing major challenges for our members.
And finally, Cian, there are business supports in the budget, but not everybody is happy.
Yeah, that's right, Justin. But just a reminder, some of the measures that were announced yesterday, the employment wage subsidy scheme is extended until April next year. There are targeted commercial rates waivers for the last quarter of this year for businesses that aren't fully open. And there's a new tax credit for the digital gaming industry, amongst other things, of course. But the 9% VAT rate is causing a lot of angst for the hospitality sector. And that's because it will end at the end of August next year. Here's Adrian Cummins, CEO of the Irish Restaurants Association.
There's mixed reaction to it, mixed emotions, happy with a number of measures in the budget, but deeply unhappy with specifically around the VAT rate increasing from 9 to 13.5% on the 1st of September next year. At a time and a critical time for industry during our recovery, there are some good points within the budget, the extension of the commercial rates waiver, the business supports in the first quarter of next year, and also increased marketing spend for our tourism industry to get more activity around international travel and airport access. They have to be welcomed.
That's Adrian Cummins, CEO of the Restaurants Association of Ireland there. Cian McCormack, thank you for that.
Tributes have been paid to the founder and the leader of the Chieftains, Paddy Maloney, whose death was announced yesterday. President Michael D. Higgins said Paddy was at the forefront of the renaissance of interest in traditional Irish music. Our reporter Eilidh Sheehy has been speaking to some musicians in Dublin.
The trip to Douro on the ferry. Are you tuned up there, lads?
Musicians at the Cobblestone Bar in Smithfield last night fondly remembered the founder and leader of the Chieftains, Paddy Maloney. Naily Mulligan recalls the first time he met Paddy in 1968 in Bettystown, County Meath.
There was a danger in those days of the Ealing Pipes kind of dying out a bit, you know, so we got 50 plus pipers together and Paddy was one of those. And they formed a society called Napeebri Ealing, which is still alive today. And Paddy was also on the first committee of Napeebri Ealing, which was formed in 68 in Bettystown, and was one of the, I suppose, the driving forces behind the formation of that drive to keep the Ealing Pipes alive in Ireland, you know.
So you're obviously an Ealing Pipe player yourself. You have them here, and we just heard you playing there. Did you get inspiration from Paddy?
Yeah, I did, because in my younger days, I listened to a lot of recordings. One of the recordings I listened to a lot was the Drones and Chanters, which was brought out by Clatter Records in the 1960s, and Paddy was on that, playing solo. You mainly heard him playing with the Chieftains after that, but I thought it was a fantastic recording of Paddy, and that was very inspirational.
Simon McBride on the flute described Paddy as an inspiration and a true gentleman.
Whether he was playing on stage or whether he was introducing instruments from different countries and nationalities, he was always welcoming, and no matter what he did, he was very much a gentleman, the way he spoke about people and the way he included everybody.
Banjo player Kieran Wade says Paddy played a big part in bringing Irish traditional music to the world stage.
I've seen him in concert and I always thought he was very clever in the way he marketed the Chieftains across the world, that he got them playing in concert halls like Carnegie Hall and all the other big concert halls in the big cities across the world, and made Irish music kind of well known to people. And he connected with rock stars and all these other kind of types of music, Roy Cooter, all these guys that brought the music to a much wider audience, and I think we owe him a big debt for that.
These people enjoying the trad session at the Cobblestone shared their thoughts on Paddy Maloney and the Chieftains.
Devastated. I never met a man, but like, what an icon. Like, they revolutionised Irish music, not in the sense of ballads, Ballads is one thing, the Dubliners dealt with that, the Chieftains dealt with actual traditional Irish music, tunes, jigs, reels, hornpipes, all of that. They brought that to like a big stage.
I think the legacy of Eve is his music and his pipes and his charisma and what he did to promote the pipes worldwide. He played all over the world.
Well, I think within the Irish music scene he's going to be sorely missed. He's a legend in Dublin and worldwide.
Celebrate Paddy's life and his music. Yeah, that'd be great.
Some sounds from the Cobblestone Bar in Smithfield in Dublin, where musicians were speaking with Eilis Sheehy last night.
RTE Radio 1 Sport with Kia. Discover our 2-to-1 offers at your local Kia dealer. For more, log on to kia.com.
And Darren Frehill is here with the sport. Good morning, Darren.
And a very good morning to you as well, Justin. The Irish team, very impressive last night in their 4-0 win against Qatar. It was a friendly at the Aviva Stadium, and Callum Robinson was the star of the show, scoring a hat-trick. And that makes it 5 goals for him in 2 outings. Shane Duffy headed in a header as well. It was a 4th goal. And I have to say, it was, without doubt, the best performance from an Irish team since Stephen Kenny took charge as manager about 13 months ago. It's been a very satisfying international window. 2 wins, 2 clean sheets and 7 goals. And of course, there's bigger tests to come against Portugal and Luxembourg next month. But certainly heading into that window now, in good health. We'll have lots more on the match a little bit later on in the programme. In our World Cup qualifying group, Portugal beat Luxembourg 5-0, and another man with a hat-trick last night, Cristiano Ronaldo. Who else? That win leaves Portugal second in Group A, a point behind Serbia, who they host in their final game, but they could get the job done when they play us. Northern Ireland's slim hopes of qualification for the World Cup have ended. They lost 2-1 away to Bulgaria. England slipped up at home. They drew 1-1 with Hungary at Wembley. England need 4 points from their 2 remaining games to book their place. The game, though, overshadowed by crowd trouble inside the ground. Hungary fans jeered England's players taking the knee at kickoff, and then they clashed with police and stewards. Scotland were not at their best, but they beat the Faroe Islands 1-0. If they win against Moldova next month, they will secure a playoff place. The Irish under-21s beaten by Montenegro. In Gaelic games, Meath manager Andy McEntee has been given a vote of confidence by the clubs in the county last night. He won the vote 46-27. There was one spoiled vote. McEntee has managed the team for the last 5 years. Connacht will have Bundiaki available for their game against Munster this weekend. He returns to the squad following an extended break after his involvement with the Lions. Alex Wooten is also available for selection against his former province. Defending champion Judd Trump is into the last 32 of the Northern Ireland Open. He is bidding for 4 wins in a row in this tournament, and he has now won 23 consecutive matches in this event. The Irish men's cricket team beat Papua New Guinea by 8 wickets. Ireland play Bangladesh tomorrow. And finally, there's racing today at Punchestown, and the first race goes to post at 1:15. Back with more sport after the news at 8:30.
Now, the association representing Garda superintendents is holding its annual conference in Kildare today. The association is accusing the government of preparing to give more power to oversight bodies to deal with Gardaí than the Gardaí have to deal with criminals. It's also critical of proposals in the forthcoming Policing and Security Bill, which it says gives unfettered power to the Garda Ombudsman and the new Garda Board. Superintendent Declan McCarthy, member of the National Executive Committee of the Association of Garda Superintendents, is with us. Declan McCarthy, this is your first conference in almost 2.5 years, and top of the agenda will be the power of oversight bodies such as the Garda Ombudsman and the Policing Authority.
Yeah, that's correct, Angus. We have no issue as an association with oversight and with governance and everything like this. The issue we have here is that these powers are almost draconian. They're unfettered powers. For example, in one of the heads of the new proposed act, in head number 104, it says, subject to the act, the authority may do anything which it considers necessary or expedient to enable it to perform its functions. Now, if that kind of power was proposed to be delegated to Gardaí, civil liberty groups and other groups throughout the country would rightly be up in arms about that level. And yet the Gardaí are expected to allow an oversight body have that level of power over us. Again, there's a power of entry built into it without warrant entry to a Garda premises. And our concern again there would be that Garda premises isn't defined. And these are greater powers than the Gardaí have. We cannot, save in very exceptional circumstances, enter any premises without warrant. And those warrants are normally court approved, and there's court oversight and everything like that around the obtaining of those warrants. We have to swear informations to obtain them, and rightly so, that level of oversight and governance is there, but it doesn't seem to be applying to the oversight of an Garda Síochána.
Declan, the government says this new law is designed to improve performance and accountability. It wants to see effective resolution of complaints and upholds fair procedures. So it seems like very reasonable intentions for this law. You've said why you feel it's not appropriate. So what's the association's compromise here?
It's not for us really to find the compromise. It's for the government to find the compromise. The issue we would have is that at the moment there is almost a presumption of guilt, and the evidence really around that would suggest at all ranks throughout the job, if a member of an Garda Síochána has a complaint outstanding against them, that the policing authority are loath to allow their promotion go ahead while this complaint is still being processed. And we would have an issue with the timely manner in which these complaints are being dealt with. So we're making a very detailed submission at the moment in relation to that act. And we've been invited by the Doyle Committee to make that submission. We're in the process of putting that together, and we will address all those concerns in much greater detail in that submission.
Another issue that will be raised at your conference today is what your association is calling the reactionary comments from those charged with oversight, and you're now asking that they refrain from expressing what you say are partisan views without any semblance of impartiality or full knowledge of the facts. One of those oversight committees is the policing authority, and I suppose we've had some high profile comments from the authority chairman Bob Collins, particularly in relation to the cancelling of 999 calls, over 200,000 calls cancelled between 2019 and 2020, 3,000 related to domestic violence. And now we find a further 53 in recent times. They were also cancelled. And Bob Collins described these actions as incredible, wholly inappropriate and utterly dismissive of people who call 999. Is that not a reasonable response from Bob Collins?
The issue here is that all is not as it appears to be in sometimes when these matters break. And to make reactionary comments without waiting for a full investigation to be completed doesn't serve anybody well at all, neither the authority nor an Garda Síochána. And it's very difficult to make spur-of-the-moment comments like that and knee-jerk comments. It doesn't help either the Gardaí, the victims or anybody involved in this process.
Finally, and very briefly, Declan McCarthy, Justice Minister Heather Humphrey, she's going to address your conference today. What sort of reception is she likely to receive?
She'll receive a very positive reception, and I mean, we're by our very nature, I suppose, we're conservative in at the rank that we're at, and we're very respectful of the minister. And she will receive a very positive reception, and we hope that she listens very clearly and closely to our president's address to her.
Superintendent Declan McCarthy, thank you very much for joining us.
A number of measures aimed at improving the childcare sector were announced yesterday, with the Minister for Public Expenditure and Reform, Michael McGrath, saying that they marked a turning point in the government's approach to the sector. But what's been the reaction of parents, childcare providers and education providers to the measures that have been announced? Joan O'Sullivan reports.
As creches began to close for the evening in Rathmines in Dublin yesterday, parents gathered to collect their children and to discuss their initial reaction to the budget. The extension of the universal subsidy of 50 cents per hour for a Tusla registered childcare place to all children up to the age of 15 was generally welcomed. But Manny said much more needs to be done on this and other issues.
It's a start, but it's not enormous help. Just childcare is a huge, huge amount out of the monthly household pot, and it just does not a lot to help working parents. But we would have loved to have another child, but we just can't afford the childcare.
It's a welcome addition, but when you have school costs and after school costs, when you actually break down into it, it's not an awful lot. It's maybe 750 hours by 50 cents is about €300 per year, which in the grand scheme of things, risk isn't really an awful lot.
Well, if it's a benefit to my child now she's in after school, that'd be great. Like, any sort of reduction in fees would be appreciated. And the free GP for 6 and 7 year olds, that's brilliant, because she's just turned 6, so we'll be able to get another 2 years out of that.
So we used to have childcare from 7:30 to 6:30. That reduced during COVID from 8:30 till 5:30. And so we're paying the same fee but getting reduced hours. And now we're going back to the office, it's going to be much harder to make that work, being able to drop the kids off and then get into the office on time. And so it would have been good to see a bit more on that front, maybe something around tax relief for the cost of childcare.
Karen Clintz is the chief executive of Tiger Childcare, which employs over 180 people. She said the expansion of the National Childcare Scheme would increase the administrative burden on creches, but she welcomed the new funding stream announced for childcare providers, which aims to raise staff wages in the sector.
I think it was a really positive budget for childcare, and I do agree, I suppose, what was said in regard to it being a turning point. Look, it's not perfect, but it is really a great step in the right direction. So we have an issue where we have colleagues at the moment who just aren't paid enough. And so we have these really qualified staff who are just cannot afford to work at it. If colleagues aren't paid enough, well, then, you know, you can't have quality for children because they need the same adults that are building relationships with them all the time.
Now, this increased funding is being tied to a request that childcare providers like yourself freeze fees. Is that something that's going to be straightforward to do?
It really depends on the details. You have to see what those details are going to be behind it.
Last week, concerns were raised about the lack of access by parents who are not in full-time work to the second subsidy available under the National Childcare Scheme, an income-assessed subsidy. Labour Senator Marie Sherlock said she'll be seeking further clarity on whether there will be changes to this aspect of the scheme.
We welcome the policy change in terms of access to after-school hours for all children, regardless of their circumstances. But of course, this will only have a positive impact on the most disadvantaged of families if those families can access the means-tested support, because of course the 50 cent per hour universal subvention is not going to be of much help to those families.
So we heard nothing new today then in relation to the means-tested payment, did we?
Certainly from reading through the detail from the department, I didn't learn anything new with regards to the means-tested payment. But certainly I think we will have to hear from Minister O'Gorman to clarify that over the coming days.
Meanwhile, over 1,000 positions for special needs assistance were announced as part of yesterday's budget, something Linda O'Sullivan, who's an SNA working in Dublin's northwest, says is both very welcome and sorely needed.
Anybody looking into education can see how much SNAs are needed, especially after the pandemic. But I hope what was delivered today and what Norma put out there, the 1,000 plus SNAs, that will actually work in theory and we'll see it on the ground. I work in a deaf school and we see it every day. We need more people, but we're just not getting, we just haven't got an increase in allocations. The last 2 years has been a frozen allocation for SNAs because of COVID, but we need more SNAs than ever to try and deal with the demand and the new children, we'd say, that have started school since the pandemic. So look, it's good news. More SNAs equals more jobs, but the devil will be in the detail.
Yesterday also saw class sizes reduced for the second year in a row through an increase in the teacher-pupil ratio, something that Jonathan Hanley, a principal at Assumption Senior Girls' School in Walkinstown in Dublin, said would make a real difference for teachers and children.
I think it's over 90,000 pupils are in classes of over 30 pupils, you know. So it's not ideal, especially when you consider that the EU average is, I think it's around 20:21:1. So today's news that it'll be reduced by another pupil per teacher is definitely a positive one.
John O'Sullivan reporting.
We'll get a chance now to take a closer look at how businesses have reacted to yesterday's budget announcements. To do that, I'm joined by Nancy Fallon, tax partner with KPMG, and Paul Hackett, CEO of Click and Go and president of the Irish Travel Agents Association. Paul, maybe starting with you, what will budget 2022 mean for your company and for your industry?
I think the sector in general would be very pleased to see the funding for the restoration of air connectivity, the funding to airports, that 90 million euros. Like Dublin, for example, was the fifth largest hub into the United States. That's gone. We lost a huge number of routes, and that's going to take time. So for the aviation and the travel sector, that funding is very, very welcome. And that feeds into the wider economy because the benefits there are very widespread. So good move on the part of government. The confirmation of the employment wage subsidy until the end of April, also very welcome. Travel Agents Association, we had made a pre-budget submission in terms of support for our sector because our sector is going to finish 2021 at 80% down. That wasn't forthcoming yesterday, but we'll continue the dialogue with deeper as we go through. I think the big thing though, Adam, that really wasn't covered or really addressed is the issue of staffing and recruitment and employment, and that is across every sector, public and private. And I think we need as an economy to start make it more attractive for younger Irish people to remain here and to attract back the non-nationals who we have lost during the pandemic.
Specifically, what would you like to have seen around staffing?
I think what we need to do is understand that we are such a high cost economy to live in, that cohort need extensions of their tax bands specific to their age group because they're facing serious issues around high housing, around childcare, and you're just hitting the high tax bands too early for these people. So there's no incentive for them to remain in this country and there's no incentive for them to come back here if they have gone away.
Okay, moving over to Nancy Fallon, tax partner with KPMG. We've heard Paul's perspective. What do you think was in Budget 22 for businesses?
So there were a number of measures introduced for businesses. As Paul mentioned, we saw the extension of the EWSS scheme, which essentially extended the scheme to 30 April 2022, and it's good to get confirmation in relation to that. Secondly, as well, some small changes to startup relief for companies. It's a relief which allows a reduction in corporation tax for startup companies, and that was extended for a further 4 years, and also extended in terms of the time frame in which companies can claim relief under that from 3 years to 5 years. Additionally, also some changes to the Employment Investment and Incentive Scheme, which again is a scheme which encourages investment in Irish businesses. And also, I suppose, finally, the introduction of the digital gaming tax credit, which was announced in the budget last year.
Any missed opportunities that you could see?
I think there are a couple of missed opportunities, and I suppose acknowledging that it was a difficult budget given the budget package that was available. But I do think in terms of encouraging investment in Irish Indigenous businesses, I do think it would be important to have seen some further changes around capital gains tax incentives with regard to investing in these businesses. So further changes to the EIIS and also changes to entrepreneur relief and also perhaps a reduced capital gains tax rate for investors into Irish Indigenous businesses.
A number of business groups seem to take issue with the extension of the 9% VAT rate. They would have liked to have seen it gone a bit further. Would that have been an expensive thing to do?
Yeah, I mean, it's like with all these supports, they do obviously result in some cost to the exchequer, and the benefits and the costs need to be weighed up. I mean, I think it's welcome that we got confirmation that it would extend to the end of August next year. But again, I suppose time will tell and we'll see how the additional funding to that industry will assist them in terms of bringing them off their feet.
Nancy Fallon, who is KPMG tax partner, thank you for that. And to Paul Hackett, CEO of Click and Go and President of the Irish Travel Agents Association.
Giveaway gamble is the Irish Independent's assessment of yesterday's budget. 4.7 billion euro giveaway, says the Irish Times. The Irish Examiner says the government has moved to stave off a winter of discontent by helping the elderly, parents, young people and the vulnerable. There are plenty of budget supplements explaining it all. 24 pages in the Examiner, 32 in the Independent, 8 broadsheet pages in the Times. Stop smoking and buy an electric car. That's the consumer advice of Conor Pope in the Times. Smokers who drive long distances and live in large homes are likely to be the main losers after this year's budget, he writes. Almost everyone else looks set to be spared any tax increases or additional charges. The Irish Daily Mail offers another point of view. Gone before you can get it, is the headline. The paper reckons that rising inflation and spiralling fuel costs will wipe out the government's efforts to reward the public with broad welfare and tax reliefs. The Irish Daily Star and Irish Daily Mirror both lead with the death of a young Irish musician, Thomas Kennedy, from County Mayo in Georgia. The papers say he was thrown into a river in the city of Gorey last Friday after five men allegedly confronted him, attacked him and stole his mobile phone. Yesterday, the Star says it emerged that five people appeared in court in Gorey and four of them were charged with murder. The Irish News and Belfast Telegraph on their front pages both look ahead to what the EU is likely to propose today on the Northern Ireland Protocol. The News says that a solution on importing medicines is expected. The Telegraph says reports have suggested that many of the checks on goods entering Northern Ireland from Britain are set to be removed by the EU. Despite all the budget coverage, The Times and Independent find room on their front pages to pay tribute to Paddy Maloney, who died yesterday, and there's a large photograph of him in both. The founder of the Chieftains in 1962, he was described by President Higgins as being in the forefront of the Renaissance of interest in Irish traditional music. The Minister for Culture, Catherine Martin, said, "We have lost a giant of the national cultural landscape." And Maloney opened up the tradition to other forms of music. John Marr in The Independent says it's almost easier to list the household names who didn't work with the Chieftains. Those he mentions include Mick Jagger, Madonna, Pavarotti and Ry Cooder. The RTE broadcaster John Creedon, also quoted in the paper, adds Frank Zappa and Stevie Wonder to that list. Paddy Maloney was said to be especially proud of the album the Chieftains made with Van Morrison. Irish Heartbeat, released in 1988, fused the talents of Dublin and Belfast like never before, says Marr. Back to the budget, the Examiner devotes a page to two negative responses. Rory Hearn of Maynooth University says that investor funds will continue to laugh at us for another while yet, as this budget does nothing to stop house prices and rents rising further. And Karen Chizielski of the Irish Environmental Network, in the same paper, writes that the budget is yet another missed opportunity to treat the climate crisis with the sense of urgency that is desperately needed. The government repeatedly tells us our planet is on fire, she says, but its actions fail to deploy the large-scale firefighting tools we need to face these crises head on.
As we've been hearing, the European Union will today offer to remove a majority of post-Brexit checks on British goods entering Northern Ireland in an effort to ease tensions with the United Kingdom over the Northern Ireland Protocol. It follows a speech yesterday from UK Brexit Minister David Frost, in which he warned it would be a historic misjudgment if the EU did not consider scrapping and replacing the protocol. We can speak now with Katie Hayward, who is Professor of Political Sociology at Queen's University in Belfast and Senior Fellow at the think tank UK is a Changing Europe. Good morning, Katie.
Morning.
We'll get on to the EU's proposals shortly, but first, some strong words from David Frost during his address at the British Embassy in Lisbon yesterday. He also said the protocol has lost consent in parts of Northern Ireland. What's your assessment of that speech?
Yes, I mean, the way to understand it is that we feel as though we're coming into the end game in relation to the protocol, and both UK and the EU definitely see this as the last chance to make major adjustments. And what we see from Frost there is the idea from the UK government that it wants to get the hardest possible Brexit, because obviously it looks at the protocol and sees that as the way by which UK remains tied to the EU, online and following EU rules. And of course, the infamous jurisdiction of the European Court of Justice. So David Frost uses the last chance to reduce those events to sort of achieve that sovereignty that he's been talking about for some time now.
Sorry, your line broke up there a little bit there. So we might just move on a little bit. David Frost, he's proposed a new legal text to replace the Northern Ireland Protocol. He's presenting that to the European Union. Is that likely to change anything?
It's not likely to change very much at all. I mean, basically, he's referring to the command paper there. We've seen what's in that. We don't know that as a text, but just as a set of demands. I mean, what's really of interest today, of course, is the European Commission's proposals. And we expect in those to see outlining technical, practical ways to address the problems that have arisen. Of course, what David Frost is looking for is something more than that, for a new type of protocol, but there's a huge amount of rhetoric going on there, and quite a lot of effort to sort of
reassure unionists to some degree that the UK government has recognised their concerns. And this is the problem, of course, that those technical solutions of the European Union won't be political in a way that will kind of reassure unionists. And in a big part, therefore, we're looking at what the UK government can do to temper the concerns of unionists and to reassure them that the protocols that will finally operate will keep Northern Ireland very much an active part of the UK's internal market.
You touched on it there, that there's a bone of contention, a big one between the two sides in the form of the European Court of Justice and its jurisdiction over issues in Northern Ireland in relation to trade and customs and so on. Manish Šeškević hasn't included any proposal on the role of the EU Court in his proposals. David Frost is asking for it to be removed, its authority in Northern Ireland. So how do we square this circle?
Yes, I mean, it's very unlikely. In fact, it's extremely unlikely that if Northern Ireland continues to have access to the single market for goods and effectively be part of it, that the European Court of Justice jurisdiction can be removed. I mean, there's a possibility some kind of fudge or some kind of use of words that can be sold by the UK government as a win in this regard. And we've seen this before in the incision of the democratic consent vote, for example, in the final version of the protocol out in October 19. And that was something that was directly used to address unionist concerns. The funny thing in this point, of course, is that, yes, some unionists, the EUP now, are talking about Court of Justice jurisdiction, but really what there, this is very much reflecting the fact that David Frost sees this as the last chance possible Brexit. And so we do hope, of course, that these technical talks won't be held up with too much of a focus on the European Court of Justice jurisdiction and instead getting to the point of addressing the real concerns and difficulties in the operation of the protocol.
Apologies, there's a slight breakup on the line, but one more thing, Katie, I wanted to ask you about was in relation to Article 16 and the possible triggering of Article 16, and David Frost mentioned it in his speech. What's his objective there? Is that a serious intent that the UK might trigger it, or is it more to influence any potential talks going forward?
Yes, I mean, even in the way that he talked yesterday in the speech about the UK's responsibility to safeguard peace and prosperity, I mean, there's a resonance there with the idea that the Article 16 use would be safeguard measures, albeit a slightly strange one. It's definitely something that a number of unionists in particular are calling for the use of. But the effect of Article 16 would very much be to prolong the talks. It would complicate the process. And it really doesn't seem to fit with the idea that this will be a sort of sharp, intensive round of talks. And of course, we should be very aware that the use of Article 16 is very much a symbolic gesture. In economic terms, it would be only negative, really, for Northern Ireland, and certainly it won't help create that kind of stability and certainty that we're all looking for now.
Okay, Katie Hayward, Professor of Political Sociology at Queen's University Belfast and Senior Fellow at the think tank UK is a Changing Europe. Thank you very much for joining us this morning and apologies for any breakup on the line there.
Let's get some opposition reaction to those measures announced yesterday. And we're joined in studio by Independent TD for Wexford, Verona Murphy. Deputy Murphy, good morning. Thank
good
you for
morning.
Joining us. Increases in social welfare, an increase in the minimum wage, a new working from home tax break, more money for every government department, something for everyone in this budget, was there?
Not really. And the particular difficulty I have is that there's money for every department. I think it's time government started to look at the wastage in those departments. I mean, we have an underspend currently in the Department of Health, which receives currently 22 billion. They've given it an extra billion, 250 million to reduce hospital waiting lists. The reality is we don't have a management structure that works in that department. You can't fire money, you can't keep...
Are you suggesting that there should be less money for the Department of Health, given the crisis we have in health?
But it's not making any difference, Cormac. We still have a crisis. We still have waiting lists that are growing. The money is not the issue here. I mean, if you have procurement that isn't working and we're spending millions on products that we can't use and then we donate them to India, for instance, in the case of the ventilators that we bought for COVID, this is ridiculous and it has to stop. We have got to start looking at the wastage.
Free GP care for the under eights. Is that something that you would welcome?
No, because it's spin. I mean, we can't give free GP care because we don't have the doctors. 700 doctors will retire this year. 295 are in training, and you do not need to be the Minister for Finance to do the calculations on that. It's false hope to people. People are continuously contacting me, telling me they can't access a GP. They can't access GPs in Wexford, particularly, are not taking on new patients. Dentists, equally, not taking on new patients. Medical card patients receiving for the first time free dental care, not able to access a dentist.
These are all measures that you would have supported if you had of you were going to run.
Cormac. I think that's a pretty old stale argument.
You were going to
argument.
Run as a Fine Gael candidate.
I won't be supporting this budget.
You won't be supporting
it. I certainly won't. Can't support something that continuously throws good money after bad, where there is no result. There's no result from these measures. You can't put money into a department that has an underspend without looking after the entire structure.
The government has said that increasing housing supply is the best way to deal with rising rent costs, and that's why money went into developing housing rather than mitigation measures for renters. Do you accept that?
The first part of the statement is absolutely correct. Supply is the issue. The reality is the government are creating policy and making policy that's unimplementable. At the moment, and I'm very involved in this because I sit on all our own county council meetings, including at local level, we're forming county development plans all over the country that are actually putting in densities of high density into rural areas, and developers just won't build. It's unimplementable. They continuously give out about people who are taking judicial review proceedings. That's not the issue. The policy is the issue, and that's where we need to start. We need a planning policy that's fit for purpose.
What would you do to address the rising cost of rents then? Would you have included any specific measure to tackle rents?
No, I think the issue, again, it comes back to supply. If we can't cure supply, I mean, we can't blame the landlords. If something is scarce, it's scarce. And again, as I say, all of the policies that government are putting forward, none of them are going to deal with the actual supply in a short time space. So we need to look at our planning policy. For instance, the SHD policy yielded 20 million in legal bills from challenges. Policy that was unimplementable, that was deemed illegal by the courts, and all we got really was a big legal bill.
Do you accept that the carbon tax is necessary?
No, I actually don't accept it, because the reality is that we already have quite a lot of excise and tax on our fuels. There are simple measures that government could take that would cost nothing. I've said it before, I'm on the record. Remove all of our toll barriers. Each time a truck or commercial vehicle, such as a bus, stops at a toll barrier, it expends a litre of fuel. The reality of carbon tax last year is very different to this year, because we've seen such a rise in inflation. Inflation has actually taken care of the incentive side. Carbon tax now at this juncture, when we have inflation at almost 3%, is actually a penalisation and should very much be reviewed.
A final question, Verona Murphy. It was announced yesterday that there will be free contraception for women aged between 17 and 25. Should the burden for avoiding an unwanted pregnancy fall exclusively on women, or should there be some measure for young men as well?
Of course, I think that's a no-brainer. And I mean, even the fact that it stops at 25, does somebody stop having sex at 25? I mean, it's a ridiculous measure. It's more spin, to be honest. I mean, there's two people involved in any act, well, at the best of times. So, I mean, it should be both male and female. And as someone who is an unmarried mother, as they used to term it, single parent, whatever you like, it certainly should be given to all, and all should take precaution, and all people, apart from anything, it should be used not just as a preventative measure for unwanted pregnancies. We have to look at the side of sexually transmitted disease. And I think that, you know, this is about joined up thinking, which there's very little of. have in this government.
Independent TD for Wexford, Verona Murphy, thank you very much indeed.
Now, Paddy Maloney was one of Ireland's most renowned musicians. Yesterday, his death was announced at the age of 83. President Michael D. Higgins paid tribute to Paddy Maloney, praising his extraordinary skill as an instrumentalist and crediting him with bringing a greater appreciation of Irish music and culture internationally. Louise Mulcahy, Irish traditional musician and a renowned piper, interviewed Paddy and played a duet with him as part of a documentary titled Mnon Abib, which will air on TG Cahir in December. And Louise, I'm delighted to say, joins us this morning. Good morning to you, Louise.
Good morning, Agus. Thanks very much for having me on the programme.
Now, we're going to hear from you in the next half hour performing, but we'll just chat with you first for the moment. And only a few short months ago, you had the honour of interviewing Paddy and you did a duet with him as well.
That's right, Angus. Well, I suppose as the nation has chorused over the last 24 hours, we've lost an iconic figure in Irish traditional music. And I treasure the memories that I have with Paddy Maloney only a few short months ago as part of the interview process for the Mnon Abib documentary. And on that particular day, we saw a joyous reunion of childhood friends, that being Paddy Maloney, the great Paddy Maloney, and Betty Nevin, a fellow piper who attended piping classes with the great Leo Rousham in Dublin. And we go right back to 1951 to the iconic photograph, which features a line of pipers. We see a very young Paddy Maloney and on the left hand side of the photograph, and a very young Betty Nevin centre photograph. And the interview really documents and discusses those beautiful, precious moments as children in Dublin. They obviously hadn't met in many, many years, and that was a really moving and beautiful reunion. And of course, as part of that, we duetted on the tin whistle one of Paddy's favourite tunes, The Cook in the Kitchen. And again, on that particular day, we saw the iconic figure, the fantastic musician, vivacious, vibrant and exuberant. And we saw that real warmth in his personality, and it really is a moving piece of footage.
And plenty of tributes, as we say, coming in the last day to Paddy Maloney, none more so from President Michael D. Higgins. And he made the point that Paddy Maloney brought his music to a wider audience. And I think if you look at the list of people he's done duets with over the years, there's, I think the joke yesterday was you have to list off the famous names he hasn't done a duet with, as opposed the ones he has. And he leaves an incredible legacy behind him, doesn't he?
An incredible legacy. I think he's inspirational and inspiring on so many levels, as a musician, as a person, as a performer, and of course as a recording artist, and his work as a producer also. But we see that he elevated the Uilleann pipes to a new audience, and he brought the sound of Ireland, he brought Irish traditional music, arts and culture to a platform, to a global platform around the world, performing in many important and iconic spaces and performance halls. And I think his vivacity and his passion and drive and love for our Irish traditional music, Uilleann piping and collaborations, of course, reverberating around the world in those important spaces.
Indeed. And Louise Mulcahy, for the moment, we'll leave it there. But
RTE Radio 1 Sport with Kia. Discover our 2-to-1 offers at your local Kia dealer. For more, log on to kia.com.
It's 24 minutes to 9 on Morning Ireland. Now, with more reaction to Ireland's win last night and the rest of the day's sports news, here's Darren Frehill.
And an impressive win it was, Angus. Another step in the right direction for the Republic of Ireland as they beat Qatar 4-0 last night. Callum Robinson, star of the show again, scoring a hat-trick. And that's 5 goals for him in 2 outings. Shane Duffy headed in the 4th. And it's been a very satisfying international window. 2 wins, 2 clean sheets, 7 goals scored. And of course, the games against Portugal and Luxembourg to come up next month. The thoughts of Ray Houghton shortly. But first, let's get the thoughts of Shane Duffy, who has been telling Tony O'Donoghue how this turnaround in fortunes has come about.
I think everyone can see that we're building, and it's getting there. It's 2 good results this week, but full belief, it's really enjoyable to play. We've had really good performances, but not getting the results. And this week we've had both, so it's really pleasing to see that all the work that, especially the manager, he puts a lot of work on it, and he's took a lot of stick for maybe not the results, but the performances have been there, and we've all believed in it. So it's really nice when it comes off. So we just sit in there now. That's the standard, and we've got 2 big games next month. So we're looking forward to that already.
That's the key, isn't it, to reproduce that now against the Portugals and the Luxembourgs?
Yeah, that's it. So The group's been together now. I think we're gelling as a team, as a squad. And the longer we're in that together, we're getting better knowing each other. So that's just we set the bar now. We set performances, but not get the result, as I said. So it's against that we've played well against Portugal, Serbia, but we haven't got the win. So to keep them performances up and get the results, we've got two clean sheets this week, which is positive, and if we can build on that.
Ray Houghton is with me now. Ray, is that the best you've seen Ireland play under Stephen Kenny?
Yeah, without a doubt, Darren. It was refreshing, wasn't it, to watch them last night? I've got to say, the attitude of the players was absolutely spot on. When you think they had a good win on Saturday, but a really tough journey home, and people don't really think about that. I think it was 8 hours, so they got back early hours of Sunday morning, so they didn't have a lot of time to, you know, refresh themselves for last night's game. But I thought they went about it in the right way. The way that they passed it, the movement was good. The decision making between passing out from the back, which they didn't do as often as in previous games. We got the ball forward. Our midfielders were very prominent. And obviously, with Robinson up front, we've got someone who's really on form, confident, scoring goals. But someone I would like to just highlight, I thought was probably the best player, although Robinson will get all the headlines and rightly so for his hat-trick. But that's the best I've seen Jeff Hendrick play in a long, if not ever, for Ireland. I thought he was absolutely like outstanding as a fellow midfielder watching him last night. I thought everything he'd done was absolutely spot on. His movement was good. He got in up close to the striker. Yeah, got in and around the opposition, won the ball back. His passing was excellent. You know, the one that he set up Robinson for his third goal, that's the sort of pass that we've been missing in the previous games under Stephen Kenny. So last night, and I'm taking into account the opposition were poor, but we were very good last night.
Yeah, good stuff. A first hat-trick for an Irish player at this level since the days of Robbie Keane. How impressed have you been with Callum Robinson and given the backdrop of the COVID storm he found himself in?
Well, it's amazing at times, Darren, when you have situations like that, how it spurs you on, you know, and then you start to prove yourself. But I thought his all-round game once again last night was really, really good. You know, he comes short, he wants to get involved in the build-up play, and then his movement's getting better. And I'll tell you what was typical of it. If you have a look at his third goal, just purely analytically, and say where his starting position was and where his finishing position was. So he came short to get involved in the build-up play, realised that it wasn't for him, and then he spun in behind the back line, and that gave Jeff Hendrick the opportunity to play that lovely through ball, and then he played it off the defender, a little bit of good fortune through the keeper's legs. But I thought his movement for that goal really, you know, showed you what a quality striker should be doing. We haven't seen that anywhere near enough in the previous games, and it's as if after the win on Saturday, something's clicked. Everyone's now been responsible in possession of the ball. Everyone looked confident. And obviously, what has been lacking and what we've been saying for the last few months is we haven't been scoring enough goals. And that's changed in the last two games. 7 goals, as you said, there, 2 clean sheets. That's what you're looking for. Now, as I said, after the 3-0 win the other night, you've got to build on that now. You know, that you've got to, so we've started that with a victory last night against Qatar. We've got to carry on to Portugal next month and Luxembourg as well.
Ray Houghton, great talking to you as always. Thanks for your contribution on Morning Ireland this morning. Finally, in Gaelic Games, Meath football manager Andy McEntee has survived a vote of no confidence. He will continue to manage the county next season. Got a vote from the county's clubs last night. And also good news on the hurling front for Meath, because their manager Nick Weir will have Saoirse Bulfin, who has worked with Davy Fitzgerald very closely over the last number of years, working in his backroom team next year. That's your sport for now.
We're joined in studio now by Taoiseach and Minister for Enterprise, Trade and Employment Leo Varadkar to talk about some of the measures announced in yesterday's budget. Taoiseach, good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Morning.
The economist Colin McCarthy said yesterday that the budget was a bit like waking up on Christmas morning and finding that there were a lot of little presents under the tree, but there wasn't very much in any of them. Nobody's going to be very much better off because of the budget yesterday, are they?
I think most people will be better off, whether it's as a consequence of the income tax package or the welfare package or many of the different measures that exist there in terms of healthcare and childcare. But I think fundamentally it was about 4 things. First of all, putting the public finances back in order, which is crucially important. It was about helping in some way anyway with the rising cost of living, and it's certainly done that. It was about investment in public services and also about throwing a lifeline to businesses that need it. So, you know, no one budget can solve every problem that the country faces. It's only a day's work, but I think it was a good day's work.
But you said yourself yesterday that you couldn't be certain that this budget would be enough to compensate people for the rising cost of living. I mean, for example, the minimum wage increase by 30 cent, that will be instantly wiped out by inflation. And that's not really an increase there at all, is it?
Well, the minimum wage increase is 30 cents an hour. It'll start on the 1st of January and was recommended by the Low Pay Commission. At the moment, inflation is running at about 2.8%. We project inflation for next year to be about 2.25%. So it would certainly ensure that wages keep up with inflation. But, you know, I think with any budget package, you can't just, it's very easy to zero in on one measure and say it's not enough. I think you have to look at it in the round. And, you know, say, for example, somebody on the minimum wage is going to receive an increase in their pay, but they'll also receive a bit of help in terms of the USC threshold being changed. Potentially, you know, their kid might receive an increase in the childcare subsidy. If they've a young adult going to college, might receive an increase in terms of the student grant. Might benefit, for example, from the extension of medical cards or the reduction in prescription fees. So I think if you take it all in the round, it will make a difference, at least in terms of the struggle to meet the rising cost of living, which is such a real thing for so many families.
It is. Now, you announced yesterday as well a new tax break for remote working. Mm. Earlier in the programme, we heard from a CIPD, that's the professional body for HR professionals, and they're saying that that could be worth as little as €50 per year to remote workers. Given what we know about the cost of light and heat increasing dramatically, it's not very ambitious, is it? It doesn't send out a great signal that you want to promote working from home and remote working.
Well, you know, it is an existing tax break and we're retaining it and we're trebling it, which isn't a small thing. So essentially, if you're working from home, you can take 30% of your utility bills, that's broadband, electricity and heat, and you can claim 30% of that against tax. Now, of course, it depends on how many days a week you're working from home. We anticipate the average claim is going to be about €250. You'd claim 40% of that back. Yeah, and that's for somebody working at home 2 days a week. But obviously for somebody working at home 5 days a week, it'd be more than double that. But, you know, it's not insignificant. There's also the per diem. Your employer can give you €3.20 a day, and that's tax-free. But, you know, I think, like a lot of things, it's not designed to make, necessarily to make working from home financially attractive. It's just designed to help you to meet the cost and defray the cost of doing so. And if you think about it, during the pandemic, people had to work from home. You know, it was the rule, if you like. We're moving into a new phase post-pandemic where it's going to be a choice, and we want to be a choice for as many people as possible. And this is just a little way of helping.
Why is there no relief in this budget for renters?
Well, you know, I think you need to bear in mind two things. First of all, we've brought in a rent freeze in real terms. Next year, rents can't increase by more than the rate of inflation. And one thing we decided to do in the budget was to keep in place the Help to Buy scheme. And a lot of renters want to buy. They don't want to rent for life. They want to own their own home. And the Help to Buy scheme could be worth 20, 30,000 euros to them. And I think that is significant that's been retained. The opposition parties want to get rid of that. They want to give you a rent tax credit worth maybe 1,000 euros a year on the one hand. They want to take away the Help to Buy worth 20,000 on the other hand. But, you know, I think one thing
There's not a single measure in the budget, is there, that will actually lower the cost of rent for somebody currently renting next year?
No, there's not. And that's something we had to give consideration to. And we did give consideration. So if you think about it, the housing crisis affects people in different ways. For some people, it's the cost of rent, struggling to pay that. For some people, it's the cost of the mortgage, struggling to pay that. For some people, many still living at home with their parents, it's struggling to save money to raise a deposit. And a particular rent tax credit proposed by the opposition would only help people those who are struggling to pay the rent. We want to do something that would help all workers. And that's why we brought in the indexation of tax bans and tax credits.
Okay, but there is a growing portion of the population who are renting and who are looking for action on rents. And there seems to be a little urgency on doing anything to help those people because, I mean, even politically, it would seem foolish not to cater for a voter base which is growing and which will look for alternatives if their needs aren't being met by the government.
There are three things. There's the rent freeze in real terms brought in a few weeks ago, making sure the rents don't increase by more than the rate of inflation. There's the Help to Buy scheme. The opposition wanted to scrap that. We're keeping that in place. We'll help renters raise the deposit they need so they don't have to rent for life and they can buy a home, and home ownership is our ambition for everyone. And then thirdly, there is the income tax measures, the reduction in income tax by indexing bans and credits. That's worth about €400 to the average person, €800 to the average couple working full time. But instead of just giving that to people who are renting, which is what Sinn Féin, the opposition, proposed, we're giving it to people who are paying the mortgage because that's expensive too, struggling with the cost of childcare, or potentially people who are at home and trying to raise a deposit.
Doesn't that go to the core of the criticism of this budget, that it is that you have spread everything, you've spread the goodies too thinly?
That's a criticism, but I think that's not a fair criticism because, you know, the alternative argument would be you only provided tax relief for some people and not for others. And what we've tried to do in this budget really is the four things I mentioned at the start, to get the public finances back under order, to help out those struggling businesses and help with the cost of living.
Can I ask you about the zoned land tax? It's a 3% tax on zoned land. How is it different from the vacant site tax levy?
Okay, so the vacant site tax levy, first of all, applies to vacant sites. There's only a couple of hundred of them around the country. The ZLT, this new zone land tax, is something fundamentally different. We think it's going to apply to about half of all zone land in the country, maybe 8,000 hectares. So this is a really extensive measure. And what we're saying to people and companies that own zoned land, land that could be developed for housing, for example, we're saying to them, you're on notice. You have 2 years now to get planning permission on that land, to get building on that land if you have planning permission. And if you don't do that, you're going to face a tax, and that tax will impact on the profits you thought you'd make.
It's 3%. The vacant site levy was set at 7%. It's actually a tax cut for land hoarders, isn't it?
No, because for landowners that are currently paying the derelict site tax, which is a different tax, it'll continue at 7%. This is a new tax imposed on landowners that currently pay no tax on their land. So they're going to go from 0 to 3. And bear in mind, the purpose of this tax is not to raise money. It's to send out a very clear message to landowners that if you're sitting on zoned land, if that land is serviced, if you could build housing on it, well, you need to. And if you don't, we're going to seriously impact and eat into the profit margin that you thought you were going to get. And
yes, but they'll still make profits, won't they? Because the cost of land is rising by more than 3% annually. Hmm. So it isn't much of an incentive, is it, if you set the tax rate so low?
Well, bear in mind, it's 3% a year. So if somebody sat on development land for 3 years, that's 9%. So, the profit margin that you thought you were going to get by building 20 houses on that land is going to be seriously diminished. It depends on the land, of course, but, you know, the profit margin that you thought you were going to get is going to be seriously diminished. We would anticipate that with this tax now being very signaled clearly in this budget, that it sends out the message to landowners, get the planning permission, get building. If you don't, you're going to see your profits eroded through this tax. And if needs be, we can increase it.
In 2019, Fine Gael said it would provide free GP care to all under 10s by the end of 2021. Yesterday, you announced that there would be free GP care for under 8s next year. When will that measure start? And isn't the fact that it's under 8s and not under 10s an acknowledgement that you haven't been able to keep your promises?
Well, I guess this year we have to do it because you're right to say that this has been announced before and hasn't been implemented. You know, I was the Minister for Health that brought in the free GP care for the under sixes. We were able to do that. We haven't been able to make a huge amount of progress on that matter since. But what we're doing is we're saying to GPs that we're going to increase it for another 2 years for children who are age 6 and 7, and we're going to pay the same fee as the under 5s, which actually is quite a substantial fee. And we think, or at least we hope, that'll be enough to get them on board. And there had been opposition to it before, but we think with that very fair fee, that we'll be able to do it. And then next year, we'll then add another 2 years. But also, there are other measures in the budget that we shouldn't forget in health as well. The DPS, the amount you pay for medicines, that's going down. So no household will pay more than €100 a month for medicine. That's come down substantially from where it was before. There's also a measure in there to reduce or even eliminate prescription charges for children. So, you know, this is very much launch a care in action.
There's also to be free contraception for women aged between 17 and 25. Why is there no comparable scheme for young men? Is the government saying that the burden of avoiding an unwanted pregnancy should fall exclusively on women?
No, we have extensive programs already that offer free condoms. Quite a lot of money is put by the HSE into that, so they're readily available.
Not on a scale like this, though.
I think it's a pretty big scale, and scale that we've had for quite some time, offering free barrier contraception, particularly in college campuses. This is part of a women's health package. One element of it, as you mentioned, is free contraception for women under 25. That's going to be introduced during the summer. There's also actions around period poverty, which is particularly important too, and investment in the national maternity strategy. So, you know, I'd hope people would see that as a positive investment for in terms of women's health.
All right, just finally and briefly, Tánaiste, if you would, Dominic Cummings, Boris Johnson's former advisor, has said that the UK government never intended to stick with the Brexit deal that it negotiated with you, they did that negotiation, they made those promises to win an election and intended to ditch bits of it afterwards. And that's what we are... That's what we are seeing with David Frost yesterday. Mm. In the context of what David Frost said about scrapping the Northern Ireland Protocol, can the UK government be trusted on Brexit now?
I've seen those comments. I hope Dominic Cummins is speaking for himself and not for the British government. But those comments are very alarming, because that would indicate that this is a government and administration that acted in bad faith. And that message needs to be heard around the world, because if the British government doesn't honour its agreements, doesn't adhere to treaties it signs, that must apply to everyone else too. So at the moment, they're going around the world, they're trying to negotiate new trade agreements. Surely the message must go out to all countries around the world that this is a British government that doesn't necessarily keep its word, doesn't necessarily honour the agreements it makes, and you shouldn't make any agreement with them until such a time as you're confident that they keep their promises and honour things, for example, like the protocol.
Tánaiste Leo Varadkar, thank you very much indeed for coming to talk to us today.
That's Louise Mulcahy, Irish traditional musician and piper, playing a slow air on the Uilleann pipes as a tribute to founder and leader of the Chieftains, Paddy Maloney, whose death was announced yesterday at the age of 83. The piece first recorded on the Tin Whistles album by Paddy with Sean Potts in 1973, and that is a fantastically enchanting rendition of it from Louise Mulcahy. Thank you very much. Now we can speak with Martin Hayes, a renowned fiddle player and founding member of the Gloaming traditional music group. Martin, good morning to you.
Good morning, Angus.
We've heard many tributes to Paddy Maloney in the last 24 hours. And the big sense seems to be that he was all about sharing his knowledge, his expertise, and bringing his music to a wider audience. And while you never performed with him, you knew him very well.
Well, I knew him, and I would meet him at festivals, and I think the last time I met him here was in a hotel lobby here in Dublin. You know, just I would run into him casually here and there, and so I'd known him over the years, and of course I've known the music of the Chieftains from like the very beginning. Of course, the Chieftains are about in existence the entirety of my life, and the sound of Paddy Maloney and the Chieftains has been a backdrop to Irish culture, I think, for all of that time.
And we can hear Louise Mulcahy in the background playing a tribute to Paddy on the Uilleann pipes. And across the world, Paddy did a lot for bringing the sounds, such as those lovely haunting and chanting sounds of the Uilleann pipes, to that global audience, didn't he?
Yeah, well, in Paddy's youth, the Uilleann pipes were an instrument almost on the verge of extinction, you could say. And by the time he has passed away, it's a sound that's universally recognised across the globe. And I think in large measure, you have to say it was due to Paddy in that respect, because there was no greater ambassador than Paddy and the Chieftains for Irish music and Irish culture on a global scale. So the sound of the Uilleann pipes is now in movie tracks. It's all over the world. It's a familiar sound. And I think it's the sound of Paddy in many ways.
And I asked Louise earlier about her, what she thinks his legacy will be. What do you think it is?
Well, I haven't seen anybody take to the stage in a global way. We had imagined our music, our traditional music, as a kind of a dialogue, an internal music form that we ourselves understood and communicated. But he has proven that traditional Irish music is a universal medium of musical expression that can be heard, understood and appreciated on a global scale.
And of course, he was a founding member of Claddagh Records together with Garrick the Brún. He brought his love, his passion for Irish music across the world, as we said, but also very importantly to the Irish diaspora. And I think it's a unique identifier of being Irish. When you hear that music, I think you associate it with these isles right away, wouldn't you?
You would, yeah. And I mean, I lived in America like for over 26 years, and so I can tell you that people like in America, and Irish Americans and Americans in general, like the sound of Ireland, the sound of Irish music for them is in fact the sound of the Chieftains and Paddy Maloney.
Perfectly said. Martin Hayes, thank you very much for joining us and paying tribute to Paddy Maloney, who passed away at the age of 83. Now we'll hear a little bit more of the Uilleann pipes from Louise.